following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Gazette News Group presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast studio in Schenectady, New York. Another great show for you on this week before Thanksgiving. I want to talk, of course, union hockey, both the men and women. The men are in action on the road at Cornell and Colgate. The big news this week on Monday, the Garner Chargers were in the top 20 polls of the USCHO.com and USA Hockey. First time in a while that union's been in the USCHO poll since 2019. And the last time the men were in the USA Hockey poll was last season, November 5th. So we'll talk also, we'll talk about the team's outstanding penalty kill this year. We'll have interviews with defenseman Nick Young and forwards Brandon Burr and Lucas Buzziol. Of course, we talked with Josh Halgie, the men's head coach, on Wednesday's podcast. So you'll get to hear the players' perspective of the getting ranked and the penalty kill as well. The women's team's back in action after a week off. The union finishing up final exams for the first trimester. Union gets back into conference play this weekend, hosting Cornell and Colgate. And, of course, what could have been last March, Union had a shot of forcing a third game in the best-of-three ECAC Hockey Tournament quarterfinals. But Cornell rallied in the final couple minutes to not only tie it but win it and in game two to take that series in two straight. We talked with – or I talked with Union women's head coach Tony Macy and defenseman Stephanie Bork and Quinn Dunkel about that, and just getting back into action after a week off. Drew Wemple, our Gazette high school sports writer, stops by to talk high school football. And the Section 2 championship games were last weekend. Of course, the big upset was Saratoga Springs over CBA in the Class AA final. We'll preview all the state quarterfinal round matchups this weekend. And then Will Springstead, executive sports editor of the Daily Gazette and Union College football beat writer, talks about the Garner Chargers' 28-21 victory over RPI in the Dutchman Shoes game last Saturday, which not only got the trophy back in Schenectady, but it gave Union the Liberty League title and an automatic berth in the NCAA Division III football tournament. The Garner Chargers will head to Allentown, Pennsylvania on Saturday for a 12 noon game against Muhlenberg. So Will and I will talk about that. So coming up, we're going to talk Union hockey here next on the Parting Shots Podcast.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by NISFA and the New York State Athletic Administrators Association.
Welcome back to the podcast. The Union men's hockey team's back in action this weekend in ECAC hockey play, where they'll take on Cornell and Colgate on the road at Lina Rink on Friday and at the Class of 1965 Rink on Saturday. Union coming off a spectacular weekend last weekend, outscoring UMass Lowell in New Hampshire 13-1 in those two rounds, and it actually should have been 13-0 had the referees in Friday's game not missed a late tripping call where Alex Lorenzo was tripped and nothing was called, led to a shorthanded goal for UMass Lowell. Of course, the big news on Monday, the Union is ranked in the top 20 of the USCHO and USA Hockey polls, number 20 in both of them. And just for clarification, I do vote in both polls. Union had been receiving votes in the last four polls prior to Monday, but not enough to crack the top 20. But I think weekend, the 13-1 romp last weekend opened up some eyes around the country. So we had a chance to talk about that, as well as Union's excellent penalty kill, second in the nation, only behind Harvard, their fellow ECAC hockey rival. So, of course, always going to the line of rink is tough. We talked about that with Josh Algy on Wednesday. So let's get the perspective of the players. Here are the forwards, Lucas Buzziol and Brandon Burr, and team captain and defenseman Nick Young. Well, guys, on Monday you found out you got ranked in the polls, USHL and USA Hockey Poll at number 20. Next, start with you. Your thoughts on getting ranked? First time this program's been ranked since 2019.
Oh yeah, that's something we've been looking for since freshman year. Seeing it come to fruition feels good, but we're obviously not satisfied. We want to keep pushing that rank up and keep playing the way we've been playing.
Yeah, what Nick said, it's nice, but obviously want to see the higher eventually.
Lucas?
Yeah, just going on what they're saying. I mean, obviously it was a good accolade, but you know, there's a lot more stuff to conquer the rest of the year.
Does this put more pressure on you guys, you know, as you head into this conference weekend with the Cornell, another team that's ranked, and Colgate?
No, I wouldn't really say so. I mean, we know what we got inside that locker room, so I wouldn't really say it's pressure. I mean, it's just more like the expectations of you know, this group this year is we want to take a step as a program and as a team, and that comes with a little bit of pressure. So, you know, we kind of just embrace it, you know, just kind of run with it.
Brandon, you guys were getting some votes the last 4 weeks, but not enough to get in the top 20. Do you think with the 13-1 outscoring Lowell in New Hampshire this past weekend, woke some, opened some eyes around the country?
I definitely think so. I think it kind of brought more attention to what we have on our team and showed in the polls this week. So.
What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think when you have kind of a dominant performance like that against two, you know, really good teams, it speaks volumes to everybody. But that's something that we have to be consistent with and can't just let it be a one-weekend thing.
Yeah. Lucas, for you, the penalty kill has been outstanding this year. Number two in the country right now. Only Harvard's been better. Last year, the penalty kill struggled. I think it was 57th in the country. What's been the turnaround this season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you say it right there. That's a big jump from 57-2. But, I mean, it's only a couple games in. You know, we want to continue that. But I just think a lot of buy-in. I think, like, if you look at our penalty kill, it's just all four guys buying in, and including our goaltender. It's every unit that's going out there to kill, and you know, we take a lot of pride in it. You know, every time we're going out there, we don't want to get scored on. And, you know, it builds a lot of momentum for our team, and we want to continue to do that going forward.
What's been the difference on the ice wise? I mean, is it more aggressiveness, maybe better with the sticks than maybe last year?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a couple little things, a little bit of detail, but I just think, like, you know, Coach Z and Coach Howard, all the coaches that are part of this, the penalty kill, just do a really good job and, you know, give us the pre-scout on other teams, and, you know, we just kind of got to execute. And, you know, we've been doing a good job, and we want to continue doing that going forward.
Yeah, Josh mentioned Coach Z's taking ownership of it this year. How has he handled things and maybe changed the philosophy?
Yeah, I mean, he comes in every day, you know, ready to get better and better, and, you know, with video and whatever it is on the ice and practice or, you know, pre-skill. But I think whatever he gives us, you know, it helps us a lot. And, you know, we got two real big tests this weekend in Cornell and Colgate, so we hope to continue, you know, having a good penalty kill going against them.
Nick, what have you seen? How much has that improved penalty kill helped the team so far this season?
No, it's been such a help. I think that, you know, going off what Boo said, like having guys that have experience in the kill now and kind of have been in this situation last year into this year has helped so much with guys just being dialed in and knowing exactly what to do now for two full years. And I think it's paying dividends for the whole group.
Brandon, this weekend, Cornell, I mean, you guys did sweep them last year, but as always, liner rink's a tough place to play. You guys are on a good roll right now. What's going to be the key to keep things going this weekend?
Just prepare the same way. We trust what we have, as I said before, so we just got to execute to our abilities, and I'm sure we'll be fine.
Lucas, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, kind of what he said. You know, we know what we got into the locker room, and you know, obviously it's too big in conference games, but I think if we play the right way, you know, we can go in there and get two big wins.
Wrap this up with Nick.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Just stay consistent what we're doing. Keep our heads focused one game at a time, one shift at a time, and that's the key to success for us.
Now let's talk about the Union women's hockey team, the Garner Chargers, after a week off, exam break, so a good time for them to, you know, catch up with things and get their priorities in order. They're back in action this weekend, hosting Cornell and Colgate. Friday's game against Cornell starts at 6, and the Saturday game against Colgate starts at 3. As I mentioned in the open last year, Union had a shot of extending the ECAC Hockey Tournament best-of-three quarterfinals to a deciding third game, but had a 2-1 lead late, but lost it, and Cornell, you know, being the outstanding team it is, came back to win that game 3-2, and then went on to win the ECAC Hockey Tournament title and earn a berth in the NCAA Frozen Four. So big doings here. I mean, that's that game, I think, still resonates with a lot of those players and the coaching staff. So let's hear first from Union Women's head coach Tony Macy. And no, I did not really give him any grief, at least on the record, about my Eagles beating his Lions. But I did text him Monday morning with the Fly Eagles Fly fight song. So I was a little mean, I guess. So here's Tony Macy.
I'll tell you, back in ECAC play this weekend with after a week off, how good was it to have that week off?
I think it was important for our team. I think getting those extra time off, especially around exam times when we're busy getting the schoolwork done, definitely gives them an opportunity to kind of refresh and recharge batteries and get ready for this next weekend here.
Yeah, Cornell and Colgate coming in this week, and the last time you faced Cornell, you were about a minute and a half away from forcing a third game in the quarterfinals. I mean, looking back on it, has that been bugging you? Did that bug you a lot during the offseason, the way that game ended?
No, only that they scored the second goal on a high stick that didn't get called. That's the only thing. And I don't bug Brian Hicks, our officiating head, either about it. But, the way the game ended, it's a learning process for our group here. It's part of learning how to win, something that we've been trying to do here. So I think it was good for us to have to go through something like that, especially the players that are returning. Now they have that experience and seeing what it takes down the stretch.
What did you learn from that game?
I think the big thing is like, you got to capitalize on your chances, and then you got to limit your chances against. I think the big one from that game is, staying within our own game, but then also not just backing off. I think, they scored too quick. We kind of backed off, got a little shell-shocked, and they scored another one. So, for us, it's just a matter of learning to continue to play even after something goes wrong. Good teams are going to score, and that's the way it works, so you got to be able to bounce back.
Did it show you, too, that your team can play with teams like Cornell? And obviously it showed against Wisconsin, even though it was a 4-0 loss. You guys, hung with them.
Yeah, I think it just gives the team confidence when it comes to playing against top-end teams. We have a lot of top-end teams in the country in our league. Having that experience last year against Cornell, this year having played, already a bunch of top-10 teams or top-15 teams, and then Cornell making it to the Frozen Four last year. That was something that we really looked at and said, hey, like, we're close, but we still got a long way to go, but we're going to take it game by game here.
What will be the key this weekend?
Well, it's going to be, we're going to have to defend well. We're going to have to stay out of the penalty box. Obviously our penalty kill, we've been trying to work on here a little bit, so that's going to have to be really strong. If we do get penalties, we can't, give them extra opportunities to score. So, we want to limit opportunities, play between the dots, and kind of own both ends.
Now let's get a perspective from a couple of the Union women's hockey players. Seems to be a regular on this podcast, Stephanie Bork, the senior defenseman and team captain, and also the fellow defenseman Quinn Dunkel. So here's what they had to say.
Guys, you're back in conference play this weekend. Cornell and Colgate come to town. Stephanie, your thoughts as you get set for these two games?
Obviously they're a big game for us. They're tough opponents, and I don't know about the team, but I definitely want to get back at Cornell for last year, so I think that's going to be a little bit more of a motivation for us, but it's just going to come down to us playing our game, keeping things simple, and putting pucks behind them.
I mean, how you guys were just been a minute and a half away from forcing that third game last year in the quarterfinals. I mean, how was that a lingering feeling on the off season? Just what could have been, maybe if you forced the third game, and who knows what happens?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I think it was in the back of our minds just to know that we were so close. But I think at the same time, we can take a positive out of it to know that we were so close with the top five team in the nation. They went to the Frozen Four, so that shows how good we are and how good we can be.
Quinn, what do you remember about that game?
A lot, honestly. Like, I thought about it so much, like, over the summer. It's irritating, and it's, like, kind of disappointing. But like, I also have, like, this feeling that, like, we're not going to let it happen again, and, like, we're learning from it, and I think we're all just really motivated to, like, show that we are capable of, like, making that movement and winning those games.
Now, Cornell, I think, can be had because they just split a series, and they had to go, I think, overtime in, against Colgate on Saturday. So how much confidence do you get? I mean, yes, it's disappointing, but how much confidence did you guys get knowing that, hey, we can hang with this team?
Yeah, I think there have been a lot of upsets, honestly, like this season already. So I think really anything's possible at this point. Like there's a lot of changing teams. Like we're a young team, but like we're still really capable of winning those games.
Yeah. What do you think you learned from that last year?
Yeah, I think definitely. We saw that this year. We stuck with like Wisconsin, things like that. Like we played our best defensive game. It's just taking the little things out of those big games to, and it just keeps on building and it gets our confidence going just to prove that, yeah, maybe in the past, like, the past was what it is, but like we're thinking about the future and we're building slowly towards it.
What will be the key on Friday to beating Cornell?
I think definitely keeping things simple and working on transition game. They love to transition fast, so it's just going to be get ready to get back on defense quick and to try to shut them down and not give them any time and space.
Quinn, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, we've been practicing a lot of our ozone movement, but I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
Coming up, we'll talk high school football, the Section 2 championships. The Super Bowls played last week, and we'll look ahead to the state quarterfinals this weekend with the Gazette High School sports writer, Drew Wemple. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
Speed, skill, physicality. Home to college hockey's elite teams, coaches, and student athletes. ECAC Hockey. 12 programs competing at the highest level. A league where champions are born and world-class professionals are trained. Where history is abundant and a commitment to the cutting edge is unrivaled. The best facilities, the fiercest competition. ECAC Hockey. There's no experience like it.
Welcome back to the podcast, and the Section 2 football playoffs are over. It's time for the state tournament, and we saw one major upset last weekend in the Section 2 tournament. Drew Wemple's here to talk about that, and it's the AA final. We never saw this one coming. We all expected CBA to beat Saratoga Springs, but in a pouring rain last Saturday, the Blue Streaks upset the Brothers to get to the state tournament. How shocking of a result was that?
Yeah, I mean, there was so many storylines coming into this game with obviously Saratoga having not won in 10 years, CBA, the four-time defending champs. But then once that weather and the delay came, it kind of probably took everybody by surprise, and it then favored Saratoga. They were able to play their style of football and then their defense at the end. Just made some really big stands. And you mentioned nobody really saw it coming. If you went deep into it, there were some signs. There was obviously that win last year against Niskayuna, who's a powerhouse like we're going to talk about. Then they beat Shaker this year. They took a big lead on Shen in their regular season meeting, then beat him in the semifinals. I mean, it's been kind of, you can see that they've been building up to this moment, and now they want to seize on it with a really strong group here. And they're going to take on a Middletown team that has kind of limped to this spot. They're 6-5 with a negative point differential. They're the alternate out of Section 9. They got the rotating bid this week. They lost to Monroe Woodbury in the sectional final, who Saratoga beat 20-17 back in week one. So I bet they'll probably take a look at that film, see what, you know, kind of compare and contrast what they can do with this one.
Did that Shen regular season loss turn things around for Saratoga?
In a way, it had to have. It lit a fire under them, I'm sure. They've won three straight since that game. They came back and beat them in the semifinals, and it went in a very similar fashion to that first meeting. Saratoga took a big lead and then had to hold them off, but this time was able to hold them off late. So I think that was just a big emotional hurdle for them to get over, and now they've just really hit the ground running.
Yeah, Saratoga Springs will take on Middletown. As you said, it'll be Saturday, 3:30 at Colony High School. And the Monroe Woodbury taking on Mamaroneck. And the other semifinal at 3 p.m. on Saturday at Arlington High School. And you think Saratoga Springs should be able to win this game?
I do. And notably, since you mentioned the other side of the bracket, we touched on Monroe Woodbury, but Middletown would also be hosting that semifinal game next weekend. They're 2-3 when it comes to games on the road. They're 4-1 at home, so I'm sure they want to get another home game in there.
Yeah. Let's look at Class A, where Niskayuna defeated Troy 28-6, and it was a little bit of a slow game, I guess, but eventually Niskayuna just overtook things and took control.
Yeah, and I think that was probably a big box checked for Niskayuna football to see that they can win a really big close game when the stakes are high. And what impressed me most about that game, other than the defense, obviously, was Thomas Bowler, the sophomore quarterback. The kid's got some guts. He threw two big touchdown passes in that game, two deep touchdown passes. One was on fourth down, and it turned a 14-6 game into a 28-6 game. So he's been impressive, and I feel like he was just kind of the icing on the cake to make this whole offense go.
And you have a story on him. It's online at dailygazette.com. It'll be in Friday's print edition as well. They'll be taking on Cornwall Central out of Section 9, the at-large bid. That'll be Friday night, 7:30 at Colony High School. On the other side of that bracket, Minisink Valley against Rye. That'll be also Friday at 6 p.m. at Arlington High School. We think Niskayuna should advance against Cornwall Central.
They've played before back in 2023 in the regionals. Niskayuna rolled in that game 49-14. Mentioned the quarterback, Ethan Gilson, had a big performance in that one. Cam Grosso had a big game in that one. So in talking to Brian Grosdorf yesterday, he said that, you know, they play a similar style to that game a couple years ago. So I'm sure they'll be looking back at that. They'll try to see, you know, compare and contrast what we can do similarly to get a similar result.
Do you think it's possible that they can get to Syracuse?
I think there's a chance. On the other side of the bracket, there's Minisink Valley, who beat Cornwall on a touchdown with under 4 minutes to play last week. And then there's Rye, who I've, from what I've heard, is one of the best teams in the state by all, you know, by any class. So it's going to be a tough road to get there, but they've got it starts with this one against Cornwall, a somewhat familiar opponent.
Let's go over to Class B, and Glens Falls took care of Able Park in the Class B championship game last weekend. They are the number two seed in the eastern portion of the bracket, and they'll take on Ogdensburg Free Academy on Saturday at 12 noon at Colony High School. Sleepy Hollow is the number one. I take that back. I'm reading the wrong. Glens Falls Section 2. I'm reading that wrong. My apologies. They'll take on Ogdensburg Free Academy out of Section 10. And the other game on Saturday at 3 p.m. at Middletown High School is Sleepy Hollow out of Section 1 against Socrates out of Section 9. Glens Falls, dominant as usual. We expect them to roll.
Yeah, they just continue to look like a buzzsaw. Last week, they proved it even more, taking on Averill Park, who was hungry to win that first title down in Class B, but they just held them off 47-7, and it really was never close. It was 20-0 in the first quarter. After the first quarter, that was the seventh time this season that Glens Falls has scored over 40 points in a game, which notably, Ogdensburg hasn't allowed any team do this year. So it's kind of rubber meets the road here. You've got two teams that play a similar style offensively that can light up the scoreboard. But on the other side, they don't give up a lot of points. So we'll see what kind of their regular seasons prepared them for to this point.
Yeah, at this time of year, I mean, defense usually wins championships. So, but Glens Falls is pretty good too in defense too.
Yes, and for them, it might just be the run game that wins them the defense as well. Chase McTague and Jordan Baker have combined for almost 1,800 rushing yards this season. They've got over 30 touchdowns between the two of them. They're on the ground. They're just really, really impressive tandem, and they kind of can, you know, score at will at times.
Yeah. Let's move over to Class C, where Schuylerville, in a wild one last Saturday, won the Class C championship, beating Fonda Fultonville. A lot of offense in that game. How's that going to translate into the quarterfinals on Saturday?
Yeah, and I think for Schuylerville, what was big here is, I mean, not that you want to be down in any game this time of year, but they trailed three separate times in that first half and had to overcome that, and then really took a big lead until Fonda Fultonville was able to climb back in it late. So I think Schuylerville, this was kind of that statement win they were looking for. They beat a team that's ranked top five in the state, and now they get a Saranac team who, at 7-3 this season, they've won 7 of 8, but you know, they only play a one game sectional final. So their road was, they were tested a lot less on the road, we'll say, than Schuylerville was to get to this point.
Yeah, that game will be at 12 noon on Saturday at Plattsburgh High School. And the other game Saturday, also at 12 noon, is Bronxville out of Section 1 against Chester Seward out of Section 9. That'll be at Arlington High School. Is Schuylerville, I mean, can they repeat?
This was something I wanted to touch on. So I looked back. There have been only two Section 2 champions that have repeated state champions. Funny enough, both were in 2016-17. One was Troy. One was in Cambridge. Schuylerville's been to the state title game twice in a row before. They went in 2019 and 21. I know there's that weird break in between there.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, we talked about how they just reloaded after the seniors they lost. And it feels like they're playing almost in a similar fashion to last year. Who impressed me most was Levi Michaud. 10 tackles and a sack last week. He played sparingly last year. Has really stepped up defensively this year for him.
Let's move over to Class D, where Greenwich, even though they played only half of football in the semifinals against Catcher for Plain, defeated Cambridge-Salem in the championship game last weekend. And they'll get Moriah, not Moriah Carey, but Moriah, out of Section 7 on Friday at 4 p.m. at Colony High School. So busy day at Colony High School on Friday. What do you see about Greenwich that could possibly advance to at least a state semifinal game?
Well, these are actually two teams that are quite familiar with each other. They played back in week one of the regular season. Greenwich won that one 34-0 up in the North Country. And then they also met again back in 2023 when Greenwich was trying to get to, or 2021, my apologies, when Greenwich was trying to get to the Superdome in Syracuse. They lost in the semifinals. So these guys have some history. They also met in last year's regional. Greenwich won that game 34-0. That was the one that was escaping me.
Mm-hmm.
Greenwich is, you know, as of late, has been able to hold their own, certainly, against Moriah. I'm sure they're going to just try to look to pick up where they've left off over the week. They've got 6 shutouts on the year, including last week.
The other game will be on Saturday at 12 noon. Tuckahoe out of Section 1 taking on Burke Catholic out of Section 9. That'll be at Middletown High School. Know anything about those teams or just?
Not particularly, no.
No, we'll worry about that next week.
We'll worry about it when we get there.
So, I mean, it seems like a pretty good representation for Section 2. I mean, we could see maybe at least 3, maybe all 4 Section 2 teams,
five of them to advance next week. I mean, some of them are some favorable matchups, and then we also just have some teams that are really at the peak of their powers right now.
All right. Well, Drew, appreciate all you do with the high school football, and we'll probably talk next week. We'll see what happens with the weekend going on.
Yes.
Right, that's Drew Wemple. Coming up, we'll talk with Will Springstead. We'll talk Union College football, the Liberty League champions, and the Dutchman Shoes trophy winners. They'll be heading to the NCAA Division III tournament on Saturday. They'll take on Muhlenberg down in Allentown, Pennsylvania. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
How can you measure the value of education-based athletics? Well, the value is in what makes it invaluable. That's because school sports aren't just about winning. They're about learning and growing. School sports aren't just about gaining trophies and accolades. They're about learning life lessons, bringing a whole community together, developing character and integrity, having coaches who mentor you and teammates who become lifelong friends. And you can't put a price on any of that. That's what makes education-based athletics invaluable. Of course, when you participate in school sports, you want to win and become a better athlete, but the purpose is so much greater, becoming a better person. Support your local school sports programs, and if you have a student, encourage them to get involved.
This message presented by NISFA and the New York State Athletic Administrators Association.
Welcome back to the podcast. The Union College football team has won the Liberty League title and the Dutchman Shoes, and they're headed to the NCAA Division III tournament. To talk about that is the executive sports editor of the Daily Gazette and Union College football beat writer Will Springstead. And Will, what a Saturday last Saturday. A crazy game, and it probably a lot closer than it should have been. 28-21 win for the Garner Chargers over RPI.
Perhaps. When Union got up 21-0, a friend of mine who was at the game texted me, said, I did not see this coming, and I quickly agreed, and both of us on top of one another said, surely RPI is going to rally right now, huh? And sure enough, they did.
Yeah, I think the Patch Flanagan interception there late in the second quarter, I think, turned the game and gave RPI life. If it doesn't throw an interception, maybe you're looking at a dominating one of those routers on situations.
Sure, you'd have been up 21-0 at half instead of 21-7 with RPI feeling like, okay, it's attainable. Yeah, and then of course later RPI rallies to make it 21-14, and honestly, Ken, I thought when Dan Quinn caught the touchdown pass from Patch Flanagan to make it 28-14 to start the fourth quarter, I thought, okay, that's it. You know, I mean, RPI's offense has moved, but not tremendously, and this defense should be able to withstand that. And I guess it did, but their third touchdown was a little fluky, to be sure.
So. Yeah, the RPI getting a touchdown and make it off a fumble, I guess it was, make it 28-21. Now all of a sudden you're thinking, it's a tension convention.
it certainly was, because RPI scored that with 2:31 left, and you thought, okay, all they need is one first down. You can do that. And darned if RPI didn't hold them 4 yards on three quick plays and a punt. So, and then RPI quickly drove right back down to the Union 5, but as they have all year, that red zone defense knows how to bend but not break. And when they needed the stop, they got it for the win.
What did let's put aside the NCAA tournament berth. What did this victory mean for Union? Of course, the way they started 0-2 and then just to run the table in the Liberty League.
I think it just validates what they thought of themselves. And I say that not in a... And I don't think they ever have in a boasting way. That 3-7 last year was really a poor taste in their mouths, and they did put in the work. I think you've mentioned it on this podcast before. I think that St. Lawrence game was really where the tide turned for this team. It wasn't just a victory over them. It was a stomping. And I think that sent a message to the rest of the league, and I think it gave Union even a little more confidence in its own ability.
What do you think it means to John Drock, his second year? I mean, obviously struggling last year with the 3-7 and, you know, coming in replacing Poppy, John Poppy. But obviously he has to feel good about this, the way things have turned around for him coming from Wilkes.
Yes, absolutely, he does, and I think it is a good thing for recruiting. I think it does a lot of things. It validates Union's hire. It makes him feel good. It helps the recruiting, I think all the signs are positive, and John believes in the people he's got in that locker room.
So now Union gets ready for the NCAA Division III tournament. They found out their opponent late Saturday afternoon. They're heading on the road. They'll be at the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, my home area. They'll be taking on Muhlenberg, heading down into Allentown, Pennsylvania. First of all, why did not Union get a – I think Union had a better record than Muhlenberg. So why didn't they get the home game?
They better league record. They're both 8-2 okay. Overall. However, Union is a league champion. But Muhlenberg, for being an at-large, is part of a three-team Centennial Conference bid, or those that got bids. So the two losses that Muhlenberg had to Franklin and Marshall and Johns Hopkins, well, those two are also in the tournament. It's one strong league. We've seen that with Union's men's lacrosse team the last few years, how the Liberty League is so well respected that Union has not won the league but has gotten to host because they are that strong. I think you're seeing that here in the football.
What do we know about Muhlenberg other than that they're in Allentown, Pennsylvania?
Well, as I said, they're 8-2, two league losses. Their loss to Johns Hopkins, which was 47-26 just a couple of weeks ago. At the time, Johns Hopkins was third in the country. And a very strange game. Hopkins gets up 20-0. Muhlenberg rallies back, almost gets within a score at halftime, stays within a score, and then Johns Hopkins scores 13 in the fourth quarter to pull away. But that was a lot closer than even the final score indicated. So this is a very strong Muhlenberg team. It's balanced. It's got about the same number of rushing yards as Union for the season. It passes a little more. The notable stat is that it has, while a few more attempts and a few more completions, a lot more touchdowns. So when they pass, they know how to find the end zone.
Yeah. Well, any particular players stand out to you from Muhlenberg?
Not that I can really remember. Their running game is even more spread out than Union's. No one has more than 89 carries, but they legitimately have 20 names on the individual statistics. The interesting thing about Muhlenberg is that they split their quarterbacks. Dante Mahaffey and Luke Spang are their two quarterbacks, and from a quick look at the stats, they will split time. And they're pretty much statistically the same quarterback. I don't know if they are, but completions, attempts, they are very similar statistically. So you can't get too locked into one quarterback because it's going to change.
Yeah. This is the 11th meeting between the two schools. The last time they met was in September 19, 2009 at Muhlenberg. Muhlenberg won that game 17-7. Muhlenberg leads the all-time series 6-4. What is it going to take for Union to go down there and get the victory?
I think one thing is that it's funny, the other stat that I found out about Muhlenberg, as good as Union has been about not allowing their quarterback to be sacked, Muhlenberg is outstanding. They've only allowed 9 sacks all year. So the success that Union has had sacking other quarterbacks might not be met. Union's going to have to find a way to stop Muhlenberg offense. As I said, their passing game is very efficient, and we have seen that where the Union defense tends to bend and not break is in the secondary. I'm not so sure with that efficiency if you even want to bend that much.
Yeah.
So I think Union's secondary is going to have to bring its A-plus game. Offensively, I thought RPI would do everything it could to stop Patch last week, and I'm sure it tried. As we know, Patch had an outstanding game. Again, I think Muhlenberg's going to dial in on Patch, and Union will have to spread its wealth.
So RPI did not kidnap Patch Flanagan then.
It did not. Their coach said it right in the presser that day. He gave you the blueprint, and that's just a fault of RPI for not kidnapping.
Yeah, probably good security by Union. So, so it's going to be. I think this will be a fun matchup, and yeah, the way things. I mean, 2 years ago, Union got to the second round of the NCAA tournament. So anything, and they did it on the road. So why not do it again?
why not do it again? As we've been saying too, that Union's coming off some semester final exams, which is a good feeling, or I say can be a good feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have that burden hanging over you. But I've also seen, as we, I'm sure you have too, over the years, sometimes, okay, you're coming off in a huge emotional win, finals are done, and you just exhale a little too much and you lose that edge.
Yeah.
So I think that might be another key for Union, is it's got to retain the edge it played with in getting here.
Yeah, I mean, you look what the men's hockey team did over the weekend, outscoring UMass Lowell and New Hampshire 13-1. Of course, they have Cornell and Colgate on the road this weekend, so we got to see how they do. And then they had to Belfast for the Friendship Four tournament. So, it's amazing to me that what these student athletes can do. I still wish Union go semesters instead of trimesters. But of course, the players and the student athletes probably don't mind because they get, 6 weeks off now before they come back to school after the new year.
Exactly. I think Union is one of the last schools in the country with the old trimester system, but it seems to work for them.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We'll see if it does against Muhlenberg.
I can't imagine getting out of college classes for the season in June, though. It seems like a little too long, yeah. But anyway. Well, we'll appreciate a few minutes. I know you'll be tracking that game on Saturday, and you'll be posting on X about it, so... look forward to that coverage.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to it.
All right, that's Will Springstead. We'll be back to wrap up the podcast and have the latest winners in the Daily Gazette's You Pick 'Em Football Contest in just a moment.
If you really want to know what's going on here, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity. From the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Back to wrap up the podcast. The Week 11 winner in the Daily Gazette's You Pick 'Em Football Contest was Jeffrey Countermine of Altamont with a 14-1 record. Jeffrey wins a $100 Price Chopper Market 32 gift card. Congratulations, Jeffrey. The VIP winner was Dwayne Leach of All Seasons Equipment with a 13-2 record. I won 12-3 to improve to 110-53-1. Gazette Executive Sports Editor Will Springstead went 11-4. He is 99-64-1. Taking a look at the standings, Dwayne Leach of All Season Equipment, Matt Margiotta of S&G Roofing, and Paul Little of Emmerich Sales and Service all have 111 wins. Jim DeMarco of Terry Morris Ford, John Keller of Katie O'Burns, and yours truly each have 110 wins. Scott Lusher of Capital Land GMC has 109 wins. Andrew Krauts of Glenville Beverage and Nick Platel of Grand Premier Tire each have 107. And Will Springstead, as I said, has 99 wins. I'll announce the You Pick 'Em Football Contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Thursday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the You Pick 'Em Football banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. And a friendly reminder, vaccines do not cause autism. Don't forget to download the Daily Gazette app and sign up for our e-edition so you never miss a headline. Subscribe today at www.dailygazette.com. We have a lot of great specials going on. When credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank Nick Young, Brandon Burr, Lucas Buzziol, Tony Macy, Stephanie Bork, Quinn Dunkel, Drew Wemple, and Will Springstead for being a part of the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at shot, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X, Threads, and Blue Sky at Slapshots. The views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Gazette News Group. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Gazette News Group. I'm Ken Schatz. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports.